News Radio KMAN. Good morning. I'm Dave Lewis, filling in for Brandon Peoples here on KMAN's In Focus this morning. Bob Koppel is our guest. Bob is the president of Ascension Via Christi Hospital here in Manhattan. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. Thanks, Dave.
Right here in the middle of the holidays, and you know, there's all kinds of health things that come into play here this time of year. So we got all kinds of things to talk about, a lot of things that have been happening at the hospital, and man, we got just a bunch of things here to talk about today.
Sure. Well, one of the things we wanted to start with was talking about just healthcare affordability. Certainly a concern for everyone, be it individuals, but certainly I think perhaps even a bigger concern anymore for employers who are trying to pay for health insurance for their employees. And, you know, I think as one of the local largest local provider, trying to do our part. You know, we've talked about this internally in our organization for the last 6 months, but we actually have no price increase this year. And three of the last 4 years, we've actually had no inpatient price increases, because that's actually where people tend to see the biggest chunk of money get spent is during an inpatient stay, just because it is very expensive. So trying to do our part to start to manage those costs better, and hopefully then downstream you'll see employers and ultimately patients having less these huge bills, you know, that are just astronomical and hard for people to manage. So again, that's one thing that we're trying to do. We did actually an experiment last spring and reduced our imaging prices at our imaging center about 30%.
And what does that enable you if you can lower those costs?
Well, so the biggest benefit is actually to patients who either have high deductible plans and or are self-pay patients. Because if you have insurance like a Blue Cross and Aetna, United, they, for the most part, already have an agreed-upon fee service schedule. So you're going to get paid X amount for doing a CT or an MRI. If you don't have one of those plans, if you have a high deductible plan, or maybe you're out of pocket the first $5,000 or $10,000, or I've actually seen some high deductible plans with $14,000, $15,000 out-of-pockets. Which
I see some with,
it's crazy. To me, that's more of a catastrophic coverage at that point, because you really, I mean, you could actually have surgery and do a couple other things for less than that. But again, trying to make it easier for folks in those situations to be able to still get diagnostic work done and still get their imaging, for example, at a way, hopefully it's a little bit more affordable for them. We've also it's probably about 6 months ago, too, we started participating in a program called MD Save, and it's actually an online access point for healthcare. I guess we're going to see a lot more of this. And so a lot of our rural hospitals and states are also participating. You basically, on your phone, can look up and see, so where's the cheapest place I can go and get a CT? And this company called MD Save has actually contracted with those local facilities, imaging centers, hospitals, whatever, and the physicians, and it's a bundled price. You're only going to get the one bill, and that's it. And it's very targeted or intended for people who have high deductible plans or who are paying out of pocket. They're self-pay patients in our language. And so that they know exactly, this is my financial responsibility, but everything is discounted as well. Because it is, quite honestly, it's a cheaper service to deliver, because there is no billing costs. There is no follow-up costs. It's pretty much you're paid, you have your test done, and you're done. And so we are starting to see things like that, too. Kansas tends to be a little bit of a late adopter of new changes and technology. And so, you know, it's probably just been the last year that we've started to see the MD Save. And I would imagine that there will be other products like this that will also, you know, we'll see in our state over the next few years. But in the big picture, it's a way about improving access and trying to make it more affordable, or at least a whole lot more transparent to people about what things actually cost. And so that's, again, just changes we're seeing. Kind of all focused on affordability.
And there's a lot of interest in trying to find out how much things are going to cost up front. And I know that's something that in the federal circles, they're trying to enable something like that.
Well, so I think everybody probably agrees on the concept. The actual delivery of that is pretty complicated, just because
factors that come into play in every treatment.
So let's take Blue Cross, for example. They're the largest insurance carrier in our state. but dependent upon who you work for, what Blue Cross plan you actually have. Because an employer can make choices as they're getting the insurance for their employees about what's covered, how much is covered, et cetera. And so you don't actually end up with a vanilla Blue Cross insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You actually, you know, even in Manhattan, we probably have 30 or 40 different Blue Cross insurances all through Blue Cross Kansas because of employer choices, which, I mean, certainly makes sense for each of those organizations. And so that's why it's difficult to say, well, so you've got this, it's going to cost you that, just because there's variance even within certain insurance companies. For the most part anymore, anything outpatient is paid under what's called a fee schedule. So, for example, like Blue Cross, they send us a CD every actually, we'll be getting it here in January. Here's the pricing for this year. By what we call CPT codes, it's just individual codes for every kind of procedure you could do. And so it's laid out, this is what they will pay. The compounding piece of that is we don't know what each employer's plan is saying that the employee has to pay. What's their copay, if you will, or what's their percentage? And so the plan might be that, so you get $1,000 for this procedure from the insurance company, but what is still the patient's responsibility? And that is what gets really gray, because it can be different every single person walking in the door.
How many different hands are involved in the pricing?
Oh, geez, a bunch.
Yeah, and the medical field is very unique as opposed to probably just about any other field industry.
We are starting to see there's certainly pockets, and there's been some experiments actually by Medicare looking at what's called bundled pricing. So everything is all in. So for example, it was probably five or six years ago now, CMS did bundled pricing projects or pilots in different communities, about 60 or 70 different communities around the country, looking at hip and knee replacement surgeries. And they paid one fee, and that was to cover everything from 3 days before you went into the hospital to having the surgery, all of your rehab, and anything you needed for the next 90 days. Medications, follow-up visits, home health care, therapy.
Just one,
it was
one item.
One big shot. And that actually took legs, and there was success in each of those markets in significantly reducing the costs of those procedures. But healthcare, like many things, gets caught up in politics.
Imagine that.
And so as you have changing of the guard in either Congress or the White House, certain things get backburnered or don't take the priority that they used to. And so we've actually seen a lot of the work around bundled pricing kind of go quiet the last year or two, which is kind of interesting. Quite honestly, they were actually able to demonstrate better quality, lower costs, and better patient outcomes. And so to me, I think that there's the left learnings there. It's just a question of, so what can you extrapolate that to? And can you actually take something like that across, you know, all 50 states consistently, that sort of thing? But there's definitely, I think that the concept around that certainly makes sense, and it would make it simpler for a patient that's typically going to get a bill not only from whoever did their surgery, but also from the surgeon, the radiologist, the pathologist, any specialist who did consults. You know, it's not uncommon for a hospitalized patient to maybe have 8 or 10 bills, and only one of them is actually from the hospital.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the way our system works.
You get them from the doctors, anesthesiologists, radiologists.
That is the U.S. That is the U.S. healthcare system. But that's probably also, I think that's what's so confusing and hard for people to understand. I mean, I work in healthcare. I've done it for 30 years, and some of this didn't always make sense to me. But that is kind of our process. But, you know, I mean, I think there's huge push, obviously, around affordability. There's just the question of access, and can people even get access to the care that they need? And, you know, a piece of that also is it where they want to get it? We certainly have challenges in our state with rural facilities. We've had a few close. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch who are on the brink of financial calamity. And also you have some that are doing really well from the rural hospital side. And we have to, one is just personal interest, but also we have to really be in tune to this because we're surrounded by rural communities and rural facilities. And so we've got to have a good good connections and relationship, but also we need to make sure that each of them stay healthy too, even though they're not necessarily part of our direct organization. But they're certainly a part of the ecosystem that takes care of patients in this part of the state. So
I think one of the things that I found interesting about some of the rural hospitals is the how the community goes to bat for those hospitals, more so probably than they do in the bigger cities. And the reason I say that is because, you know, some of those communities all have foundations to help support the hospitals. And they realize that it's a key component of their way of life to have health care available to them.
It's an economic driver. There's no question. Mm-hmm. And that's true even in a community the size of Manhattan. It's mm-hmm. we're an economic driver. We're the largest non-governmental employer in town. And so we got to take that responsibility pretty seriously.
How many employees do you have altogether?
Between here and Wamego, around 600.
Wow. Okay.
And then another 100 that work in our partner organizations mm-hmm. that work in our facilities every day. And so, I mean, that actually it's an economic driver. But I think also, I mean, it is it's about being able to keep people in the communities where they are and supporting all the other industries that we need. Remember, a few years ago, I was actually working a different job, but I was out in western Kansas, and I called and talked to my wife. So I was driving through the northern tier counties in Kansas that afternoon. And I said, the people that don't understand the need for rural health care don't understand the need to eat. Because that's, you know, where so much of our we're so dependent upon rural communities to produce the food that we eat. And so you've got to be able to keep them vibrant and healthy. Well, you've got to then have support structures, and that's everything from a school to healthcare. The question I think going forward is that a hospital or is that healthcare? Because the reality is very few of us ever go into the hospital.
But healthcare is provided mostly by your local practitioners.
Correct. I mean, in Manhattan, for example, so we will, including baby, we deliver about 1,000 babies a year, and we have about 32 or 3,300 other admissions in addition to that, so about 4,300 admissions a year. So there's 500,000 physician office visits in Manhattan every year. So you tell me where healthcare is happening.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's always got to be rural community anywhere else. You've got to have that access to primary care. That is the key, actually, to the rest of the healthcare system. I mean, that's what drives our healthcare system is primary care.
From another economic perspective, how are you handling things with challenges with staff?
Well, so that's interesting. We just had our morning huddle this morning. We were talking about some of our neighboring facilities who've actually have bed caps through the holidays because of they did not have sufficient staff. We have had success here in Manhattan. Our number of open positions has dropped by 30 in the last 6 months. It's because we've actually been able to hire people. And so that has made a huge impact with our ability to keep patients here in the community. What it's interesting now, our kind of bottleneck, if you will, is when people need a higher level of service or a service that we don't provide in the community, we're actually being limited now on where we can send them to, because those larger facilities kind of downstream from us are the ones who are now experiencing some of the staffing crises. And so there's been even in the last 6 or 7 weeks rather, multiple times that every hospital between here and well into Kansas City is all on diversion because they don't have staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just kind of a different – now it's a different problem. For the last year or so, that's the problem we fought here in Manhattan was being able to make sure that we had a adequate staff to see and keep patients here. And now we are seeing that problem downstream from us, and who we're now sending out are the critical. And so that's going to be the next challenge, I think, is where you're going to send that critical patient to and be able to get them a bed. So – we don't have a unique problem. We at least have made actually a huge progress, quite honestly, surprisingly, I'll have to say. I'm not sure that we would have anticipated some of the success we've had actually in finding staff. That's been a very positive thing. And there's these niche jobs that are incredibly difficult and elusive. A real easy one is an actual certified sleep tech. We've been looking for 2 years.
For 2 years to fill that position.
And again, it's a niche kind of job. Mm-hmm. It's a specific certification. It's all night work. And so how many people want to have a night job for a career? And so it's just, you don't have a lot of people saying, oh yeah, I want to go do that. And it's, how do you get people interested in doing things like that that are just as important, you know, ultimately, is having that lab tech, x-ray tech, nurse, et cetera. So, I mean, I think that continues to be a big challenge. I know when I was here a few months ago with Brandon, you know, we've had some success actually in the community recruiting primary care physicians. Again, as a community, we're pretty blessed and lucky. Most communities, especially in Kansas, wouldn't be able to say, you know, in the last 30 months, we've recruited 8 primary care doctors here. That's actually abnormally. That's a good abnormal. The next challenge for us actually is going to be medical specialists, because that is a little bit of a tougher nut, and we've not had success as a community to this point really in attracting lots of medical specialists.
Well, there's no shortage of challenges in healthcare these days, is there? There is shortage of time here on the radio. We do need to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Bob Koppel, president of Ascension Via Christi Hospital here in Manhattan. 537-1350 is the number to call if you have a quick question. We are running a little bit shy on time here this morning, but we still got some other topics that we want to talk about, including some technology things that are happening that I think are pretty sensational. So we'll be back with Bob in just a couple of moments here on K-Man's In Focus.